Chapter 3. I understand too well.
But you know that was only a few days ago. 5 days. Only 5 days ago. Last Tuesday. Yes, yes. If there had only been a little longer, if she had only waited a little, and I would have dissipated the darkness. It was not as though she had not recovered her calmness. The very next day she listened to me with a smile, in spite of her confusion. All this time, all these 5 days, she was either confused or ashamed. She was afraid, too. Very much afraid. I don't dispute it. I am not so mad as to deny it. It was terror. But how could she help being frightened? We had so long been strangers to one another, had grown so alienated from one another, and suddenly all this. But I did not look at her terror. I was dazzled by the new life beginning. It is true, it is undoubtedly true, that I made a mistake. There were even, perhaps, many mistakes. When I woke up next day, the first thing in the morning, that was on Wednesday, I made a mistake. I suddenly made her my friend. I was in too great a hurry, but a confession was necessary, inevitable, more than a confession. I did not even hide what I had hidden from myself all my life. I told her straight out that the whole winter I had been doing nothing but brood over the certainty of her love. I made clear to her that my money-lending had been simply the degradation of my will and my mind, my personal idea of self-castigation and self-exaltation. I explained to her that I really had been cowardly that time in the refreshment bar, that it was owing to my temperament, to my self-consciousness. I was impressed by the surroundings, by the theatre. I was doubtful how I should succeed and whether it would be stupid. I was not afraid of a duel, but of its being stupid. And afterwards I would not own it, and tormented everyone, and had tormented her for it, and had married her so as to torment her for it. In fact, for the most part, I talked as though in delirium. She herself took my hands and made me leave off. "You are exaggerating. You are distressing yourself." And again there were tears, again, almost hysterics. She kept begging me not to say all this, not to recall it. I took no notice of her entreaties, or hardly noticed them. Spring, Boulogne, there would be sunshine, there our new sunshine. I kept saying that. I shut up the shop and transferred it to Dobronravov. I suddenly suggested to her giving all our money to the poor except the 3,000 left me by my godmother, which we would spend on going to Boulogne, and then we would come back and begin a new life of real work. So we decided, for she said nothing. She only smiled, and I believe she smiled chiefly from delicacy, for fear of disappointing me. I saw, of course, that I was burdensome to her. Don't imagine I was so stupid or egoistic as not to see it. I saw it all, to the smallest detail. I saw better than anyone. All the hopelessness of my position stood revealed. I told her everything, about myself and about her, and about Lukerya. I told her that I had wept. Oh, of course, I changed the conversation. I tried, too, not to say a word more about certain things. And indeed, she did revive once or twice. I remember it. Why do you say I looked at her and saw nothing? And if only this had not happened, everything would have come to life again. Why, only the day before yesterday, when we were talking of reading and what she had been reading that winter, she told me something herself, and laughed as she told me, recalling the scene of Gil Blas and the Archbishop of Granada. and with that sweet, childish laughter, just as in old days when we were eager. One instant. How glad I was. I was awfully struck, though, by the story of the Archbishop. So she had found peace of mind and happiness enough to laugh at that literary masterpiece while she was sitting there in the winter. So then she had begun to be fully at rest, had begun to believe confidently that I should leave her like that. I thought you would leave me like that. Those were the words she uttered then on Tuesday. Oh, the thought of a child of 10. And you know she believed it. She believed that really everything would remain like that. She at her table and I at mine, and we both should go on like that till we were 60. And all at once I come forward, her husband, and the husband wants love. Oh, the delusion. Oh, my blindness. It was a mistake, too, that I looked at her with rapture. I ought to have controlled myself, as it was my rapture frightened her. But indeed I did control myself. I did not kiss her feet again. I never made a sign of, well, that I was her husband. Oh, there was no thought of that in my mind. I only worshipped her. But, you know, I couldn't be quite silent. I could not refrain from speaking altogether. I suddenly said to her frankly that I enjoyed her conversation and that I thought her incomparably more cultured and developed than I. She flushed crimson and said in confusion that I exaggerated. Then, like a fool, I could not resist telling her how delighted I had been when I had stood behind the door listening to her duel, the duel of innocence with that low cad, and how I had enjoyed her cleverness, the brilliance of her wit, and, at the same time, her childlike simplicity. She seemed to shudder all over, was murmuring again that I exaggerated, but suddenly her whole face darkened. She hid it in her hands and broke into sobs. Then I could not restrain myself. Again I fell at her feet. Again I began kissing her feet. And again it ended in a fit of hysterics, just as on Tuesday. That was yesterday evening. And in the morning... In the morning? Madman! Why, that morning was today. Just now, only just now. Listen and try to understand. Why, when we met by the samovar, it was after yesterday's hysterics, I was actually struck by her calmness. That is the actual fact. And all night I had been trembling with terror over what happened yesterday. But suddenly she came up to me, and clasping her hands, this morning... began telling me that she was a criminal, that she knew it, that her crime had been torturing her all the winter, was torturing her now, that she appreciated my generosity. I will be your faithful wife. I will respect you. Then I leapt up and embraced her like a madman. I kissed her face, kissed her lips like a husband for the first time after a long separation. And why did I go out this morning? Only 2 hours. Our passports for abroad. Oh, God! If only I had come back 5 minutes, only 5 minutes earlier! That crowd at our gates, those eyes all fixed upon me. Oh, God! Lucrezia says... Oh, I will not let Lucrezia go now for anything. She knows all about it. She has been here all the winter. She will tell me everything. She says that when I had gone out of the house, and only about 20 minutes before I came back, she suddenly went into our room to her mistress to ask her something, I don't remember what, and saw that her icon, the same icon of the Mother of God, had been taken down, and was standing before her on the table, and her mistress seemed to have only just been praying before it. "What are you doing, mistress?"
"Nothing, Lucaria. Run along."
"Wait a minute, Lucaria."
She came up and kissed me.
"Are you happy, mistress?" I said.
"Yes, Lucaria."
And she smiled, but so strangely. So strangely that Lucaria went back 10 minutes later to have a look at her.
She was standing by the wall, close to the window. She had laid her arm against the wall, and her head was pressed on her arm. She was standing like that, thinking, and she was standing so deep in thought that she did not hear me come in and look at her from the other room. She seemed to be smiling, standing, thinking, and smiling. I looked at her, turned softly, and went out, wondering to myself, and suddenly I heard the window opened. I went in at once to say, "It's fresh, mistress. Mind you don't catch cold." And suddenly I saw she had got on the window and was standing there, her full height in the open window, with her back to me, holding the icon in her hand. My heart sank on the spot. I cried, "Mistress! Mistress!" She heard, made a movement to turn back to me, but instead of turning back, took a step forward, pressed the icon to her bosom, and flung herself out of the window.
I only remember that when I went in at the gate, she was still warm. The worst of it was they were all looking at me. At first they shouted, and then suddenly they were silent. And then all of them moved away from me, and she was lying there with the icon. I remember, as it were in a darkness, that I went up to her in silence and looked at her a long while. But all came round me and said something to me. Lucaria was there too, but I did not see her. She says she said something to me. I only remember that workman. He kept shouting to me that only a handful of blood came from her mouth. A handful. A handful. And he pointed to the blood on a stone. I believe I touched the blood with my finger. I smeared my finger. I looked at my finger, that I remember, and he kept repeating, "A handful, a handful." "What do you mean by a handful?" I yelled with all my might, I am told, and I lifted up my hands and rushed at him. Oh, wild, wild delusion. Monstrous. Impossible.